Welcome to Bimmercast number 11. It is December 22nd. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and everything else to you. We are here to talk about a ton of stuff. We've got the BMW Active E, the latest BMW Project I development. We're going to be talking about the 740, BMW Performance, pricing, the 3 Series Coupe, LCI, the new Z4 Si, DCT versus manual, all sorts of stuff, so stay tuned. Okay, we are back this week with, as always, Michael on,
how's it going?
On the East Coast, holding up the east side of the fort, so to speak.
The snow belt.
That's right. Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, up here over here in Chicago, I should say, it's been kind of dry as far as the snow goes.
Yeah, we just like producing blizzards. It's what we do here.
See, I think that's awesome. I will say this, though. The throttle modulation from the 88.5 series to the E46 3 series, big difference, especially in the snow. I mean, and one has the new car has snow tires and the old car does not, has all seasons, which I plan to change at some point, just haven't got around to it. And well, let's just say one feels quite a bit more sure-footed than the other.
Yeah, snow's help with that.
Yeah, but I will say snow with rear-wheel drive and snow tires is so much fun. I wouldn't have it any other way.
It's good for being a hooligan. We'll go with that.
It is. It's true. And the not the DCT, that's coming later, but the DSC is it's pretty good at, you know, keeping you out of trouble, even if you're kind of ham-fisted. So.
Yeah, no, definitely is. And the M drive is it's a good time also.
Oh, my God, I bet. I mean, you've got the ultimate hooligan car. All right. Well, we've got a ton of stuff tonight, and we should probably get right to it. But first, and this is a tradition that we started on White Roof Radio, that obviously for those who don't listen to White Roof, it's a show sort of like Bimmercast, except for it's all about minis. Anyway, we started it with one of our holiday shows years ago, where we all took a second and talked about not what we were thankful for, or, you know, what we're looking forward to in the new year, but really just what we're drinking right now.
And Jack on the rocks.
Jack on the rocks. And I'm drinking a wonderful white ale, a Bell's White Ale from a microbrew in Michigan.
So, very nice.
Yeah, so cheers to everybody. And this very well could be our, you know, it may not. We very well could sneak a show in next week if our schedules work. But if not, this could be our New Year show as well, or close to it.
It could be. I would be more than happy to volunteer my time to do a podcast next week so I don't have to spend time with my in-laws. So.
Yes, yeah. Well, that certainly the podcast is often the right medicine for things like that.
That and Jack.
Yeah, that and Jack. That's true. So true. So true. Well, and your M3, probably in a snowing or snowy parking lot.
Oh, yes.
So a bunch of big stuff, and some of it we can talk about this week. Some of it we probably can't for a little while longer. But the stuff that we want to talk about tonight is really pretty interesting. And BMW technically only released 2 cars last week, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we've been talking about on the site, that a lot of people have been talking about. So let's just get right to it. I think the biggest or the most newsworthy release last week, or the thing that was covered the most, was the BMW Active E, which is a fully electric car based on the current 1 Series Coupe.
1 Series Coupe. I thought for sure they'd produce this thing as a hatch, but yeah, it looks good in coupe form.
Yeah, it does. And I can only assume that, you know, the coupe is, you know, certified and whatnot for the U.S. market. It was just sort of a no-brainer because this is going to be very much a U.S. car. After all, the U.S. is, and I think it's the quoting Audi USA's president, crazy for electric vehicles.
It is definitely crazy for electric. And this Active E is going to pick up right where the Mini E essentially, you know, left off. They've learned a lot from the Mini E project, as we've discussed in the past. Mm-hmm. And going forward, this Active E is the next evolutionary step in there.
There's a ton of technology in there. I mean, obviously the car is technically refined, But there's a lot of little details down to iPhone apps and software within the navigation system or within the computer system of the One Series that helps refine the entire experience. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how people respond to this as compared to the Mini E. They've also, obviously this is a rear-wheel drive car, so BMW has been able to, I think, refine, I would hope, and it certainly sounds like it, refine the driving characteristics of the car. Now, granted, it's still a 3,800-pound One Series, but it would seem that this is going to be a bit more forgiving or a bit more, I don't know, car-like, if you will, than the one, or the, I'm sorry, than the Mini E.
Yeah, and they were able to put the battery packs, you know, down the center channel of the car, the structural car, where the drive shaft normally would be. So they're able to put some of that weight in better locations than all in just the same area, which is great for, you know, balance and drivability.
Right, so the Mini E's electric engine was in the standard spot where the engine is on a Cooper or Cooper S. But then, of course, they had the battery pack just in the back seat almost, stacked up pretty high. And, yeah, I mean, I think anybody who drives a Mini E, and you'll be able to tell us better, Michael, just characteristically not the Mini that we all know and love.
No, not at all. And I don't care what people say. It doesn't drive like a Mini. It's small like a Mini, but that's where it stops. And I think this Active-E is going to drive more like a One Series because of, you know, the new developments in the battery placement and the motor placement on the rear axle.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I'm super, super excited about seeing this thing out there and actually driving it. It'll be interesting to see how BMW rolls this program out now that the Mini E, it's going to be winding down. I assume that BMW is going to be launching this right around the same time the Mini E winds down. So you've got potentially an installed customer base that has the potential to just pick up another one-year lease from another BMW electric product.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to do it a little differently from what I gather, but not definite yet. And the other neat thing about this is the plug and all that is going to be universal from what I gather. There's going to be an SAE plug basically designed from all the manufacturers, and they're going to try to all use the same plug. So you can use public charging stations with a variety of vehicles.
That's huge. I mean, that is really, really a big difference. That's one thing that, you know, we just looking at the research on the Mini E, it's a real problem.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's the same idea as everybody having a different charger for your cell phone. And how many times are you pissed you can't borrow your friend's charger because your phone's dead?
Well, and I mean, we talked about this before, but we can only imagine in, you know, the 1913 when there was all these different kinds of cars. There was probably 100 different kinds of gas nozzles, and you know, who knows if it's going to fit in your tank or fit in your, I mean, you just need that consistency across an entire, really entire world at this point.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So the Mini E has become the Active E, so to speak. BMW is going to be launching this and learning from the Mini E and creating this next step. What's next? Do you know what's after this? I mean, are we starting to get to the point where BMW is going to take a year off and now come back in 2013 maybe with a real fully fledged and fully vetted out electric car?
From a chassis up standpoint, I can see that happening. I think they're getting to the point, you know, with their joint operations with Li Motive for batteries, and they're working on producing carbon fiber with the company as well. They have different channels to go and actually develop something from the get-go for the electric power.
Yeah, I think it's really a great move for BMW to be doing this. They get a lot of press, but also, you know, they have an enormous amount of data. Obviously, this is an expensive proposition, but you know, being able to lease these cars for roughly $1,000 a month, I'm sure offsets some of that.
Yeah, some of it, but not all of it. It's going to be a very expensive. I mean, the price.
They're not making money. There's no question.
No, they're definitely not.
Yeah, no question about it. So the Active-E was, I'd say, the most newsworthy or closely followed release last week. But something else came out for the U.S. market that marked a return, so to speak, of a model that we haven't seen in a long time. And it's the six-cylinder 7 Series.
Six-cylinder 7 Series, 740i and 740li. And basically, you're just getting a six-cylinder motor, and you can package it all the way up to however you'd want your 750. So you're getting a full accoutrement just with a smaller power plant.
So this is a model that's been available in other markets for, obviously, since launch, really. In fact, you've got the 740D, which is the twin-turbo diesel engine, as really the most popular model in the UK and some other markets, and we obviously aren't getting that. But it's not necessarily unusual to see a 7 Series with a six-cylinder power plant outside the US. This is just the first time that BMW's sort of, you know, said, okay, listen, we know the 7 Series is all it needs to be. We now have an engine, a six-cylinder engine that can accommodate it for our largest market that is apparently so finicky when it comes to luxury cars. So I guess my question, and it's probably not even answerable at this point, but price point and, you know, how much of the standard features are we going to lose in this 740?
Well, I actually had the privilege of sitting down last week with Alana Bari, who's basically the manager of the 6 Series and the 7 Series for the U.S. And I asked her that very question, and she said there's going to be some packaging differences from the get-go. You know, it's like seating is not going to have the same power seats, and some of the other touches the 750 has that the 740 will not see.
But it'll still have, I mean, I can't imagine we're going to get manual seat controls in the 7 Series.
No. Instead of like 20-way, it's going to be 10-way.
Which, by the way, actually, I would love to see manual seats in the 7 Series. I mean, frankly, I'd love to see a manual, but those days are long gone.
Yeah, those days are definitely gone in that car. Executive class, they're not shifting. They're not rowing their own gears.
There's actually I'd say maybe a mid-80s 7 Series down the street from me that has a 5-speed manual in it. That just sits out every day on the street. And it's interesting to think about. It's hard to even wrap your head around the differences between that car and what you see today, even in the 740.
Yeah, things have definitely changed. It's a different market, different time. You know, bigger is better in many situations. I could see, you know, the thing I was joking with someone the other day talking about this, we're going to end up seeing a lot of 7 Series with no badges on them.
Well, that's actually pretty funny.
Because you can equip the car identical to a 750, basically. You know, you're not going to be able to differentiate without the badge. I mean, that and the motor, obviously, there's a difference driving. But you can equip a 740, and you know, basically the same way. What's neat about this car is actually it was requested by the U.S. market and the U.S. dealers, and it was launched in Europe to see how it would be received. And now it's basically coming now. It's coming out to the U.S.
It's really interesting. So which six-cylinder engine are we seeing in this?
It's the N54. Inline twin turbo, six cylinder.
So it's our old friend then.
It's upgraded though. It's got more power and more torque, a little bit more. So that's why it's a 40 as opposed to a 35. Mm-hmm.
That is an engine that I think people expected to see it go away once BMW brought out that twin scroll single turbo with similar power figures. But it seems like we're going to see it around for a little bit longer.
As I've been saying for months, it's not going away. So, I know people don't want to hear that, but it'll be here in different itinerations and different vehicles for quite some time. We probably will stay here all the way through the end of the life cycle of the 1 Series.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, there you have it. So speaking of the 1 Series, and this isn't 1 Series exclusive, but I have to turn to BMW Performance because One thing that I think most people know who are familiar with the BMW Performance lineup is that it is not priced to sell. It is priced as a premium product on the aftermarket or, you know, just sort of modification market. And I think because of that, you don't see a lot of it out there.
No, it's quite unfortunate. We've covered BMW Performance here for quite some time, and they make a great product. It's definitely well tested, well engineered, looks great, and it's very functional. Everything's really, it does what it's supposed to do and then some. But the price point has just been out there. It's more than some of the other marquee names of performance aftermarket parts, and it just hasn't been able to generate, I think, as much sales as it could if it was priced right. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think a lot of that came not necessarily from the U.S. market specifically, you know, the U.S. Management, but I think BMW AG in Germany had a lot to do with the price point.
Well, it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people at BMW North America worked very hard, and you know, we're just really excited about this, and obviously it's priced for some reason or another. It's priced at a point where a lot of people don't consider it, and I think it's interesting that this, and this is really the first time I can ever remember BMW within a year or two taking a look at pricing and saying, you know what, this is in need of adjustment. We're gonna go ahead and change it, and we're gonna be very open about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the new BMW Performance development manager for BMW Performance Parts and Motorsport, Eric Riehl, I met with him last week as well, and we'll have a full interview up on the site coming in the next few days. But since he's taken over, he's been very animate about getting the price point to where it needs to be, and that's his big push. He wants to, you know, not lower quality or lower development or anything like that. He wants to get it to a price point where people consider it, you know, not just at the dealership but everywhere else. You know, and he wants to generate some more buzz and things like that, and develop newer products moving forward that will fit more models.
Well, and one thing that I didn't see, and you can correct me, did we see a price reduction on the actual performance kit itself?
On the actual engine kit, I don't have the numbers in front of me, unfortunately.
And I don't see it in the list. And that was one thing that I did not see.
And I don't know if that's going to necessarily get the reduction right away, because realistically, the dealer installed kit actually just launched at the end of November. Mm-hmm. It was held up for many months. We first broke the news here way back in February that it was coming, and it didn't come till, you know, November, because it was being held up by California with CARB testing. And it was just the dealer installed kit at the port. They've been selling them at the port. They've sold, I think, like, 270 over the last 3 months port installed mm-hmm. kits, which is pretty good. I mean,
it's not bad at all.
And
just to remind ourselves here, the manual transmission version of that 135 kit pumps out, I believe, is it 317 horsepower?
317 on torque?
317 on torque. It's interesting because, obviously, for those who are familiar with how tunable that engine has been for aftermarket period, that's a relatively low number. You know, it seems like BMW, and we've covered this before, BMW has been somewhat conservative when it comes to tuning that engine. You're right, 317 foot-pound of torque in the manual, but in the auto, it's up to 332. Now, take away the disparity there, because we can talk about that in a second, but you've got tuners such as Dynan and other folks who are way above that in terms of numbers. Now, we can't verify any of those numbers. We don't know what that truly means. All we know is what they say. But if you believe all those numbers are equal, there's a big disparity there.
No, there definitely is. And you know, actually I drove the 335 with the kit installed, and there's noticeable difference in torque. I wouldn't say it's going to definitely change your view on how the car drives, as in neck snapping, wheel spinning, hooligan car. You know, it's not going to do that. It's definitely going to improve your performance. It's not going to impact your fuel economy. It's not going to change your warranty. And with the exhaust on there, it sounds amazing. It's a great sounding vehicle. It feels good. It's definitely got more upper pull on it with the kit installed. So it's got some variations to it. It's definitely worth its, you know, it's definitely worth the price of admission. But the, you know, the big thing is it a Dynan or even a Vishnu or anything like that putting out 375 wheel horsepower? No, it's not. But you're also not going to have to worry about your warranty being voided and yeah, Dynan says they cover your, you know, your warranty's intact. It's not. What it is an offset shoot of Dynan now covers your warranty. BMW is basically out of the loop.
They're so, out of the picture.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a different, you know, for 95% of the population that feel good about having a warranty and nothing to worry about. I mean, your clutch isn't going to explode on you on your way to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there was a lot of conversation around this article, and I don't want to badmouth Dynan or anybody else. I mean, Dynan has been around for a long time, and
yeah, absolutely.
You know, they obviously have a lot of experience in this, but it's by the nature of the aftermarket industry, and even Dynan, who some people hold up as one of the best or most polished or whatever you want to say, they are going to be a little bit more aggressive. Their clientele want them to be more aggressive. You know, so they're going to pay and expect that. And that is their market, and I think that is fine. BMW has to warranty hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cars. And by nature, they need to be more conservative. And if that makes more sense to you as a consumer, if you're super concerned about your clutch going out at 50,000 miles, then the BMW Performance product is really a good choice for you. And it may be the best choice overall. I'm not saying it is or isn't, but I think there's a big difference in ideology there in terms of what they truly want to do. It's not to say that BMW engineers can't extract an enormous amount of power out of that engine. They built it. I think they know it pretty well, obviously. It's just that they are very cautious about what they do.
Definitely cautious. And the other thing we have to remember is, too, is 4 years, 50,000 miles of wear and tear.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. That's a very, very good point. Dynan, again, I'm just referencing them. I'm nothing against them in any way. But, you know, they are just, you know, not as concerned. And probably it's probably a good thing, frankly, because that's why they're in business and they're satisfying a need, you know, for that market. BMW is probably, you know, scared to death sometimes about the amount of potential warranty claims they have just for things like clutches.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, that's just a frightening thing. But, you know, BMW Performance is lowering their prices. And that is a huge, huge thing. Because a lot of that stuff is gorgeous. I mean, a lot of their carbon fiber, just the way it's laid up is just, it's mesmerizing to me. It's you know, like Vorsteiner also does a great job with carbon fiber. And I would say the BMW Performance is at or better levels than some of the Vorsteiner stuff. So it's good stuff. And they got some other new products coming out. They have actually a steering wheel without all of the computer gadgets in it, without all of the speedo and the shift lights.
Is it just the new version of Alcantara and leather and that's it?
It's going to be an Alcantara leather wheel, multifunction. It has a flat bottom, and it has like a yellow racing stripe up at the top. It looks really nice. It's a nice wheel.
Interesting. So I guess we all know, I mean, there's obviously a lot of still these things are pretty expensive. You know, you want to obviously look at that multifunction steering wheel with the computer readout and just kind of like roll your eyes when you see the $1,200. But I've got to say, having experienced one of those things, it is incredible. I mean, it is a fantastic addition to a car. And I'm not saying you have to get it because it's clearly quite expensive, but if you're going to upgrade something, have an upgrade that you see every day and that you actually hold in your hand every single time you drive the car.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That and the shift kit, the short shift kit with the shift knob is fantastic. And
see, I have to say the shift knob, not a fan at all. I do not like the look of it.
Oh, you don't like I love the way it feels in my hand and just the crispness of the shift. And I would love to put that in my M3 if they make that for the M3, but they don't actually. And that's an area that they're going to explore is actually introducing some new product line for the M3 out of possibly something that just was released in the not-so-distant past.
Really? So, now let me think about this.
This is all speculation, Gabe.
Yeah, this is speculation. I'm just thinking about it. There was one car that was released not too long ago, and I can't think of the name, but it starts with a G, and it ends with an S, I think.
Right, and that specific car might be able to open up some product line.
So what you're saying is this mythical product line could be inspired, if you will, by this model that I remember, but I can't remember the name.
It could be, but that's, you know, that's in the distant future. That's not anything right now, in the close future. But I can say that they are looking into offering line for the LCI E92. They're going to be coming out with like some new product line for that, because the E92 body for the 3 Series, the coupe, hasn't really been developed that much because of the LCI was in the process when BMW Performance kind of got going. They're also looking into the Z4 and the X6.
So, really?
Yes.
That's interesting. That is very interesting. So let's segue, speaking of that 3 Series coupe, let's segue into when we expect to see the refresh, because we all know it's coming really soon, and rumors are that we'll see that in Geneva.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing those same rumors, that Geneva is a good place to launch that coupe and introduce it as a 2011 model year.
It's hard to believe.
It's coming. They're all coming, these 2011s. And a lot of these 2011s, if not all, will also feature brake energy regeneration.
So there's some of that that's already been in the Euro market for a while. And this is not new for BMW. Minis have had the auto stop start system basically everywhere but the U.S. for the past 2.5 years.
Right, absolutely.
So it's interesting to start to see this stuff filter into the U.S. market.
And we had a story not too long ago. It was brief and it didn't get much coverage on the site, but it was about the 8-speed transmission and how ZF and BMW have figured out a way to bring stop-start to the auto.
That's very interesting.
So that would eliminate the need for just, you know, four-cylinder stick cars, like as in has been going on in Europe for all these years with the start-stop.
Mm-hmm. So the life cycle impulse, which I think is the worst name of all time, but I think we're stuck with it, right?
Yeah, we call it an adrenaline shot.
it's the 3 Series refresh, that the 3 Series coupe, I should say. And we expect to see some mildly updated front and rear fascia, some slightly updated lights, and then as far as interior tweaks, we really don't expect much.
Yeah, I don't think much is going to happen on the interior. If you think about what they did with the sedan, they moved the buttons on the arm and changed the console a little bit, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how that thing looks. But one of the other things that I did want to talk about, and we're gonna come back to this 3 Series coupe in just a second, is this Z4 SI. We talked about it last week, and I think we all agree that it's a really cool car, great idea, but it's DCT only. And that has it's kind of caught the ire of some of the BMW enthusiasts on the site. I think there's a lot of real good reasons for it, but on the face of it, it looks like BMW is forsaking the manual market and sort of turning its back on the old school enthusiast.
Yeah, see, I don't know. It's different. It's a different take on things, and they've tried this once before. If people think back to the M5, the E60 M5, and the M6 as well, they were both initially offered only in SMG, and then the U.S. market, you know, pounded their fists, banged their feet, and said, "We don't want this SMG. We want stick." And so BMW granted the stick, but the engine and the transmission were designed as one unit in those cars, and the engine was really never developed to be powered by a stick. You know, it wasn't geared towards that initially. It was really going to be this package deal, and we're going to go ahead with it that way. So this Z4 is not all that different than that, to be honest with you. So this isn't just BMW saying we're going to forget the enthusiasts. This is an enthusiast car. It really is. You're just losing that left pedal. And yes, it's less engaging to some to not have that pedal. I'm a left foot snob. I have never driven anything without a left pedal. I understand how it is, but a lot of these new transmissions are just as engaging. They rev match. They do all sorts of things. You know, it's fun, and it's actually enjoyable to just watch it, you know, kind of be a part of it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you lose some of it. Sure, absolutely. But at the same time, you're able to get a little bit more out of the car. And in the end, I think, isn't that what it's all about? I mean, they're using straight cut gears and sequentials and all this stuff in racing. They're not really using that left pedal anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, having driven both Z4 manual and Z4 DCT, I have to say, as much as I agree with you, and as much as I'm getting excited just listening to what you're saying, I at the end of the day, I personally preferred the manual transmission. I just flat out found it more engaging.
And, absolutely, it's something we're all used to.
And to me, it's I think there's something that, you know, a few of the commenters mentioned, and there's one or two that were really really valid points that were made, but. To paraphrase, you know, this is BMW has always been a company that has catered to the enthusiast, and sometimes, you know, it was wrong of them to do it, just in terms of sales. But they've always been that company that, you know, they sold a boatload of 3 Series with the little 16-inch wheels, the luxury, the premium package, and sunroof and whatnot. And then, you know, they sort of like in the back door there, they're just like, psst, psst, you know, come back here. We've got your sport package with the manual. And, oh, by the way, it's lowered a little bit. It's just exactly how you'd want it. And that's how, you know, they sort of dealt with the enthusiast crowd. And now with this car, they're coming back and saying, this is our car. And this is going to basically be the car for everybody. And there is no manual. There's no need for it. And I can only imagine there's got to be a lot of people inside BMW that don't even like that ideology.
Well, I also think that we're looking at this car as an enthusiast car. And I would have to wholeheartedly agree and disagree with that. I think, in principle, it gives you the sportiness and the feel of a performance car. It's going to drive, you know, like crazy. And I have on... been informed under good measure that it will spin 1 through 3 without even asking it to do more. It will do it simply by, you know, rolling that right foot in there a little bit, and it'll just go 1, 2, 3 and spin all the time, you know, spin the tires with no problem. But at the same time, it is still a convertible. And Gabe, you of all people cannot say that a convertible can be a sports car an enthusiast car, can it?
Well, I think actually by the very nature, a sports car, by the English definition, should be a roadster.
Sure.
So if you want to get really specific, I would say...
Well, you know what I meant, like an enthusiast-driven car.
Yes, I understand and I agree with your sentiment. And believe me, I've kind of wrestled with this myself. Because having driven these cars, I thought for sure I'd like, you know, I prefer the DCT. But what I found... was that this car is so well sorted. It's such a fantastic car, despite the fact that the steering feel is not as pure as you'd want it to be. The manual transmission sort of adds this connection that otherwise you just do not have with the Z4, and it brings it back.
What if I told you that the suspension tweaks and the steering on this SI version connected you better to the car?
Well, listen, I'm absolutely open to be proven wrong and would love to drive it and report on it. So I think that's going to have to be it. I mean, I think we both have to get behind the wheel of this thing and just see how it actually drives, because I am very conflicted about it. I mean, in my garage right now are 2 manual transmission cars. I mean, for God's sake, one of them is 21 years old, just because I like the authenticity of it. You know, I love the fact that it's actually, you know, it takes a little bit of strength to turn the wheel and shift the thing from second to third. And I just, you know, I challenge the idea of taking away these manual controls. Yet, I'm of the generation that grew up playing Gran Turismo, and I absolutely adore the idea of flappy paddles behind a steering wheel. So
And these
I'm
flappy
totally conflicted.
paddles, yeah, and these flappy paddles are going to have different shift algorithms and launch control.
One thing, actually, to be honest with you, one thing that would keep me from buying this car is the damn pedal, I'm sorry, paddle design behind the steering wheel right now. It's the old school BMW push pull method, which I to me was designed to accommodate somebody drinking a venti latte. I mean, I look at it and I say, well, that was basically a German engineer saying, well, the American has to have the drink in his right hand and the, I mean, he's got to be able to upshift and downshift with two fingers, essentially, a thumb and a and like a middle finger or index finger while he's steering the car. And it's a shame. I mean, I just want a big old plus and minus, and I want to just wring the hell out of that thing.
I completely understand, and I think that the SI is really the way the Z4 should have launched, but that's neither here nor there. On another note, though, the motor is going to be definitely a fun time, as well as because with the overboost, it sounds like it's going to be great, and I think it'll be a fun car. It's definitely going to be around, it's going to be around 60 grand. So you're entering M3 territory price point wise. So.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a good price point to be at because it's a great car, and I can't stress that enough. And if you read the review on Bimrefile, you'll see that. But you get an incredible car for the price of essentially an M3 coupe. So it's almost down to really what do you want at that point. This is a strictly a two-seater, two-door. I would actually call it a coupe. I feel comfortable calling it a coupe that can be a convertible, whereas the M3 is obviously, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but more versatile and more accessible.
Yeah, in E92 form, it's definitely
Right, the
compared to.
four-door M3, of course, is about 55, to be honest with you, if I had the choice, I'd be getting the four-door M3 every day, all day
Greatest
long.
car ever created. And by the end of the year, my car will be 1 year old, so we'll have a full 1 year with living with the M3 coupe, sedan, rather.
No, that's fantastic. It's a great car, and I will hopefully join the ranks of ownership at some point in the next couple of years. We'll see how it works out.
But I do have to slow down driving it. I already have 23,000 miles on it, so.
In 1 year, that actually eclipses my record. I bought a E46 ZHP, as many may know, with 19, just under a hair under 20,000 miles, and I now have 40,000 miles.
Wow, so
So,
you've
and
been driving too.
that's over a year. That's about, I think, 15 months. But yeah, I think I put 17 on it in 1 year. So yeah, I did a lot of driving.
Good times.
Yeah, it is a good time. So that's the thing. I mean, and that's one of the reasons I got a car at low miles. I mean, just drive it, That's what it's there for. But getting back to this Z4 Si, so the engine, fantastic. Okay, take away the manual, the DCT argument. It is an incredible engine, and I cannot for a second believe that BMW is not going to try to use this engine in this configuration in another Si model.
I would agree with that. And one note that I wanted to say is that this DCT versus six speed, I remember, and I wrote this as a comment to somebody today, that I remember when, Australia and the UK and Germany, the rest of the world got the E92, the 3 Series coupe with the DCT. And then we had all these people crying, oh, we don't get it. Why don't we get it? This and that and the other thing. So I have a feeling that we all see it in an SI form with a DCT transmission and possibly that really hot motor and that Z4.
So, at that point, though, I mean, not to get into too many M3 comparisons here, but at that point, I mean, what's the difference between, a 6-month-old M3 for 55 grand and a 53 or $54,000 or whatever it's going to be, 335 SI? I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, I don't mean to jump the gun here because the cars haven't been announced yet, let alone released.
To be honest with you, it's going to be market. The M3 is a different animal.
Yeah.
you can't, you know, that's the thing what most people just think, oh, I can put a suspension and I can do this.
And people, you're right, people don't realize that. The M3, it's the kind of car that forces you to, it doesn't force you to, like, live a different way, but it takes its toll. Even the new one, which is, and you can speak to this more than I can, but even the new one, which has got the you know, variable suspension and whatnot, it is an M3, you know, and you have to kind of respect it a little bit more than you would a 335, a 330, any of these 3 series. You just get them and go, and you just do it every day for years and years and years.
Yeah, no, it's a completely different feel. The suspension geometry and just the overall balance of the car. There's a reason why one of the magazines or blogs or somebody that does drifting named the M3 the drift car of the year. You can keep the thing sideways because it's so balanced for an extremely long period of time. You can't do that with a regular 3 Series. You can't. I mean, even though they're...
Try doing it with a 1 Series. I mean, it's just going to push until you go off the, you know, the edge to the ocean or whatever. Wherever you are, it will hit a wall no matter where you are.
Right, with the suspension adjusted, whatever you do to it, you throw springs in that thing, you put on different dampers, whatever you're doing, it's still going to push. It's the way the chassis was designed. It's designed for safety. And so the fact that DSC actually knows what's going on, it knows you're pushing, it knows what to do. It gives it a little bit less, you know, to do. And the M3s come with a much more sophisticated computer system, braking, you know, you name it. It's all tuned for one specific purpose, and that's to be able to go from the track to the street to home.
Well, the M3, again, I can't stress enough, it really commands your respect. I vividly remember in one of the long-term reviews I had starting the thing up, and it was in the summer. It wasn't that cold, but it was a little chilly. It was like in the 50s, and it felt a little bit more lethargic. Now, it didn't turn over longer. It rumbled a little bit deeper, you know? And it's one of those things that it really gives the car a lot of character. And
oh, yeah.
You just... You have to love it after something like that.
It's cranky when it's cold, let me tell you. Last week we were in the, you know, we were around zero, and it was definitely cranky. It was a little mad at me for waking it up. But once it gets warmed up, it loves to run.
Well, you should try an 88 535 IS when it's zero. Actually, I will say that car started right up. Give it credit.
Way to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So, M3 335 SI comparisons aside, I think it's exciting to think about BMW using this engine in the 3 Series and the coupe coming up. I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. I would expect it personally relatively soon. And Michael's quiet, so we'll move on.
No comment.
Well, that's just that is purely me looking at what we see and knowing that the LCI is coming and knowing that, you know, we've got an F30, the next generation 3 Series, being tested right now. So clearly the E92 is not going to be around for that much longer.
It's amazing how quick that's coming, isn't it?
But it really is.
05 is the year the 06 E90 launched, and we're on a 7-year life cycle. So 2012, we'll see the F30.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So one last thing I wanted to touch on, and we just learned about it this weekend. We talked a little bit about it last week. The Z4 race car is
monster.
Back. Yeah, and we're not talking about the E86, E86 Z4 M Coupe. We are talking about a new race car, the E89, and what the motorsport division has done is not only have they put a hardtop on it, and we're talking a real, I assume, aluminum top with full roll cage, but they have dropped the 4-liter V8. Actually, I believe it's bigger. It's the board.
It's the GTS engine, motor.
The GTS engine that pumps out 480 horsepower.
I think it's the GTS engine. I have to look into that.
Yeah, I would guess as well. So, I mean, it's very interesting because BMW was very, very specific about saying that they had no plans to build a Z4M. Yet, we have what seems to be the race version of a Z4M. So you have to immediately stop and say, listen, are they trying to tell us something? Are we going to be getting this car sans roll cage in the next year or two? And I think the answer to that is kind of complex. You know, we could see a GTS version of the Z4M because it's so close to what you see with the race car. It seems like it wouldn't take that much financially for BMW to do that. Yet, how many, you know, $150,000 track-oriented cars does BMW really need? I don't know if they need another, to be honest with you. So does it make sense for them to release it at all? Or does it make more sense for them to take it into just the straight-up Z4M route and maybe make it a coupe only?
Yeah, see, this news was kind of intriguing to me because I know BMW North America and the motorsports team, they've been trying to get a GT4 certified for the U.S. for quite some time. Originally, we had heard that the GT4 was coming, and then it was put on hold for various reasons.
And you're talking about the M3 GT4 race car.
Yeah, and that's same program, motorsport program, and this is a GT4 race car for the U.S. And it's not been put on hold. They're really trying. They're actively pursuing getting the GT4 race car into the U.S. market for privateer racing. They truly are. But they're just hit some hurdles with homologizing. I can't say
that. I've never said that word my entire life because I can't
homologizing the car for the U.S. And racing. So they've hit a couple of roadblocks. They're still investigating it now. So that's one thing. So now this Z4 would also be, you know, part of that GT program that they have going on over there in Germany in the motorsport, but to the best of my knowledge, car has to be in production to be able to be raced. So they're going to have to do something as far as a production-based car for that car to be legal in racing. So very interesting to me to see that they're bringing out this race car where there is no street production car around.
Well, I wonder if they can somehow get around that by saying, well, we do have the Z4, it is available, and we have the engine in this car. So put it all together and there you go.
Yeah, I wonder if it's specific to certain race series, and that's why they brought it. They're introducing it as a specific class car, because all these racing circuits and different things all have their different regulations, and it's kind of like a big giant headache because none of them talk to each other.
Yeah,
and because I remember when BMW in the U.S. was competing in ALMS with their M3, car, they had the race car with the V8. In the U.S., the GTR. They actually had to cease using that car because they didn't actually have a production model of it. And they were actually going to bring a production model of that to the market if they were going to race for another season.
That's interesting.
But they took a year off. They ended that run early, and then the E90 came.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. That's I mean that was a car that was so close to dominating, and just kind of went away all too quickly.
Yeah.
So tons of stuff. I mean, we've got obviously this could be considered a slow period, but I mean we're coming up to the Detroit Auto Show. We've got Geneva. It's gonna be pretty big over the next few weeks, and I would say a few months even.
Building new stuff for us to talk about.
Yeah, so we've got a couple shows in the next couple weeks that I think we're gonna focus in on some of the stuff that we've talked about, and we may even chat a little bit about some older cars as well. We're also going to be covering the Detroit Auto Show coming up in just about 3 weeks, and we very well could be at Geneva in early March.
Yeah, we're trying. We're working on it.
Yeah, we're gonna see if the winds blow that way, so to speak. That is our show for the week. That's Bimmercast number 11. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything, then give us a shout on the contact form on Bimmerfile. Otherwise, we will be back next week, assuming that Michael and I can find the time in between holidays here. But of course, check back to Bimmerfile on a daily basis. We're going to have everything that you need to know throughout the holidays and throughout 2010. So, yeah, until then, cheers.